That's number 17975, Susan Brent, Royal Street.
Egon, Mr. Egon Brent, Reel 3. When you came to Britain, were you still communicating and hearing from your mother? Because you said earlier you were trying to get her over.
Very rarely I communicated with her through the Red Cross, which took a long time, both ways. And I learned that she gave up her flat and moved in with her brother. And the last message was, tomorrow we go to Theresienstadt. At that time, people did not actually know what Theresienstadt was. Quite rightly, we thought it was just a normal camp. I mean, it was kept, the Red Cross visited the Theresienstadt or so. I mean, they put up a facade, but they didn't expect that it was as bad as it would be, that was just an intermediate camp before the extermination. But anyhow, the last message was, tomorrow we go there, which indeed happened.
What date would that have been?
I can't see offhand. I have it. If it's important, I can give you the exact date.
It would be later in the war, would it?
Later in the war.
Yes. Now
it's easy for me to have the exact date. It would be 1942, probably. I can't vouch for it.
Perhaps we could check up later.
Yeah.
But you know that isn't so vital. It's the art would have. You weren't married yet. Your fiancé was over. How did that affect you when war started? Well, you were still doing your work in...
I was still working, and it affected me normal as any other person, actually. For me, or for us, for most of the refugees, it was a fact the war would... there would be the war, and you know all that, Chamberlain and all that. I experienced that as any other English person, you see, reading the paper and to listen to the radio and so on. And when war started, I lived in that house I told you, still in that attic. I lived all the time in that attic. And when I was in the army, Irene took that attic over. She did do later war work, the whole time of the war. And I was up there, and I heard on the radio, there's radio coming, and so I went two stores down. There was another tenant, just to have some company. That was an old lady, actually, an old actress, the type of Margaret Rutherford. You remember Margaret Rutherford? A carbon copy, and she took me under her wings. She told me, she was, I think, high in the 70s, and whenever I had a free hour, I went in her room, and so she told me about the English aristocracy, and she just introduced me about ways of life here. It was very interesting, and I went down to her, and we both went to the window, and we looked out, and then there was the alarm, which was a false alarm, and we were waiting for the bombers to come and so on. That was my recollection, how I remember the outbreak of war.
When did things change for you? Because we would have had that period known as the phony war.
Yeah.
Did life go on much the same for you during that time? Or did you... No, did you want to take part in the war? Did you volunteer for anything?
Yes, I volunteered for the army quite early. I think in June must have been in June.
June 1939.
I went to a place in St. John's Wood, which was a place to go to and to put my name for the army, because I was I intended to do something for the war office, whatever I could do. And I was asked whether I would go into the British Army. I said, definitely, whatever I'm required to do, because my head was so good, everything was fine, and that's how it happened. And December, end of December, I got a letter from the war office to report to a preliminary meeting there and there. And just 2 weeks later, I went to, with all other people, army recruits, to Charing Cross Station, this boarding the trip in the blue. We, of course, military transport, we're not supposed to know where they were going. And we went to Kent, to Sandwich, in the Richborough camp, and that was my place of training. They were all, most of the people came from London, and we felt actually a little bit superior, because we were the true volunteers. We all, most of the people had actually had jobs or so. And that's how it happened. I got my training there. And
this was the Pioneer Corps, was it?
That was the Pioneer Corps. And all the things were strange, of course, if you joined the army, the latrines and all the unpleasant things. But with hindsight, nothing actually could change my attitude. It was sort of a happy time, because everybody was very chummy, the day came when we were sent with the VF to France. It was a lovely day. We went from Portsmouth in a troop carrier, and as an escort on the right and left, a torpedo boat, and the ships, they zigzagged, of course, because of the danger of U-boats. And I was standing just high up on the ship and looked nice weather. And then once I had the idea, what do I let me in for? All the time, at least all the last year, I did everything to get away from Germany, across the channel. And on my own free will, now I go back to the continent. It was just a moment. And we went to Le Havre, where we did do all sorts of work, store work, and partly digging, as the pioneers did quite a lot. Also supply work, supplying arms and material to the front. I didn't have a bad time, but at that time I had two stripes. And we usually went out in working parties, and sometimes there were difficulties with people who didn't want to do the work which was to be done, if it wasn't so pleasant, especially digging and so on. I don't know how I managed to get a group of friends. Whenever I did need volunteers, there were about 9 or 10 people, and I knew what job was to do, and I told them. They were two were solicitors and travel life from Vienna and so on, and so I told them what the job was to do, and they did the job very quickly and so on. And the rest of the time was spare time. There was no shouting, and some of these groups, there were shouting, and people had to be reported and things like that. These things happened, of course. I mean, there were really some jobs which were not so nice. So I didn't have that difficulties, because I must have had some common sense or so. People felt I do things quietly. When I came to France, I was very surprised to get my first stripe. I didn't expect it, because many people, they were very ambitious, and during training they were polishing their shoes all the time, polishing the buttons to be spick and span and so on. I did do what I had to do, but I was not enthusiastic. And they always were out to get at least a stripe or so. I did nothing of that sort. And when we came to France 2 weeks after we arrived, I found my name on company orders. I should report to the major. So I said, my God, what have I done? So I went there, and then he said, well, could you die if I make you a Lance Corporal? I said, thank you very much.
What sort of people were in your the Pioneer Corps, in your group?
In my group, they all middle class or even upper middle class people, solicitors, were several there. They were two doctors, and then quite a lot of youngish people who had no profession, who came from university or so. Anyhow, a nice group of people, at least the ones in my company from London.
Would you say they were sort of above average intelligence for the army, your group?
Compared with the army, yes. The Pioneer Corps was groups of I think the, especially the English pioneers, they were substandard and so on, because these were the people who were otherwise not employable as soldiers or so. And I think they were called Q companies or A companies. I can't remember very much. I can look it up, but I don't know. Anyhow, there was a difference between that, and all the more intelligent jobs were given to the people like us, to the Pioneer Corps. Sometimes we had to do nasty works. We were at one time attached to the bomb disposal squad of the Royal Engineers. In Somerset, we had to dig out unexploded bombs, which was quite tricky because you never know when they started going again. You see, they were very primitive at that time. They had just a clockwork, and the clockwork stopped, but it could just start. But anyhow, everything went all right. As I said, I had my gang of people, and I had my volunteers. They always wanted to come to my room. I don't know why and how, but I had some common sense, and I didn't shout, and I did things in a pleasant way, and that attracted with some of these people I was privately friends for many years after that. Unfortunately, most of them are dead. Anyhow, that was...
When you were in France with the BEF, was there a feeling of security? Or, I was thinking of the German move in 1940 into the Low Countries and then France. Was that expected at all? Or would you say there was this sort of faith in the Maginot Line?
I think it was expected. We knew there was a war, and as a soldier you don't worry very much. You take a danger, you live with it, and you live from it. Was not unhappy. For instance, in the harbor where we were billeted, in the sea terminal, and I knew the whole cellar was full with dynamite. I didn't tell anybody, but if there would have been a bomb, I mean, it was bombed during the time we were there. The bombs mainly went in the harbor, but if one bomb would have been dropped on that building, everything would have gone up. I knew, I didn't tell anybody, but it didn't bother. You have a different mentality, and so on. Then later, there were rumors, there were German parachutes coming down in the neighborhood, and we were moved from the harbor to Harfleur, a little village. several kilometers to the front. And so far, yes, that's important, so far we had no rifles. The Pioneer Corps was supposed to be unarmed, I mean the alien Pioneer Corps. And then Sunlight was decided we must be armed because we are very near the front and so on. And quickly we got rifles, and there was no time for proper training. We were shown how to shoot roughly, more or less, all right. Anyhow, we had just the basic, the most basic training, and we were moved to that place, Harfleur, and then we knew the Germans, the Maginot Lines, they were all through, they were marching towards France, towards finally Paris. Anyhow, they were very about 3 or 4 kilometers in front of us already. And they told, but there's no danger for you because there's the infantry in front. At the back you have the French artillery, you have the British artillery, and there on the right and left there are tank regiments. So you are right at the back, which was not true at all because we were right at the front. And then we were told when the tanks come, they expected the tank to come along in direction Le Havre on the coastal road. When the tanks come along, you have to aim at the slots where the people sit behind. Now imagine, we handled rifles just a few days, we couldn't shoot, we had no practice. I think really for a trained soldier, it is like the jackpot to meet one of these little holes with his bullet, you see. So we were told that. I mean, the people who told us didn't believe it themselves. So that was the situation. We had 2 machine guns, which were at the beginning, at the one each side at the entrance of the village, and we knew the Germans came along because in front of us the day and night refugees came with carts and with cars and horses and so on. They were in front and they said the Germans are behind us. And why we were saved about 2 kilometers before, the Germans decided to make a stop on the coastal road and to march towards the coast to consolidate the part where they were in. So that was some breathing space for us. There was time for us, I mean, everything was lost and there was no artillery, nothing anymore. And we were taken back to Le Havre, to Rennes.
To where?
Rennes. R-E-N-N-E-S. That was a point, there was a danger that Paris would be overrun and Rennes was supposed to be the collecting point for the BEFs. Yeah. We built hospitals there just in advance in case they were needed, and did sort of that type of work. But it was soon, it proved to be soon impossible. I mean, Paris was taken and so on. And in June, beginning of June, as you know, I mean, meanwhile was Dunkirk, the evacuation from Dunkirk.
Did you hear about that?
No. Much later. And we, our evacuation was a similar as from Dunkirk, which took place from Saint-Malo. The picture probably was the same. We were...
Could you describe what happened to you when you were at Rennes? What happened from then on?
In Rennes we had a fairly quiet time. As I said, we built Nissenhuts for hospitals and Nissenhuts for supplies, army supplies. We did do quite a lot of unloading in preparation of the front which was supposed to be there, which never happened actually. And then it was decided there's no point, that part was lost anyhow. whatever, all the troops, I mean not only the pioneers, all the troops in the vicinity, they were as quick as possible in lorries transported to Saint-Malo, on the race course actually, in Saint-Malo, which was near the coast. And from there, the same took place as in Dunkirk. People came over, very brave people, with their little pleasure boats, whatever they could do. There were some navy ships, there was a hospital ship, the wounded, they came on the hospital ship, and so on. And there was just one destroyer, but nothing else. All the others were these private pleasure boats, whatever it was. And it was a continuous loading of boats and so on, and I came with a little boat, which a pleasure boat, a person who lived near Weymouth. And he came over with his little boat, which normally takes about eight, nine people, and so we were 20, and everything away. So we did throw away our machine guns, rifles, even the greatcoats and so on. So we kept the minimum, and so the boat went deeper and deeper, and so he said, now it's enough, I can manage, and so on. And then there was a question of mine, so the Navy was there all the time to assist, and so on. And they said, it's no good to give you mine charts, we know roughly where they are at present, it's changed from every day, but you wouldn't understand it anyhow, and your boat is shallow enough, it would go over the mine, so you have to take a chance, no guarantee, but so that we took, so we managed and everything went right till we came to Weymouth. That was we were supposed to go there, and then suddenly we did see the Navy giving us signs with flags and shouting. We didn't understand a lot anything, because the owner of the ship, how can he understand Navy signals? So we went on and on. What they meant to tell us, we should stop, because during the night there was a raid and bombs were dropped in the harbor, and they wanted to clear them first. And nothing did help. We just went and went, and so finally the Navy did shoot on us in front of us to make us stop. Now every normal and fairly intelligent person knows something is so. If they do that, so we stop. Yeah. And which was the right thing. And then two minesweepers came to the right and left, and in front of us they went with the rope in the middle, and they swept up the mines, and so we arrived in Weymouth. And Weymouth was prepared for all that. Along the beach, there were little dense provisional for the soldiers. They offered them tea and biscuits and little things, and so they were very nice. Whoever marched along there.
Well, was there much panic, would you say, in that situation,
no.
The evacuation, or was it fairly orderly?
No, it was orderly. At least in my vicinity, it was orderly.
What was the attitude of the troops? I mean, what were you all demoralized because you were...
Yes, in that way, we didn't expect that the war went that bad. We were unexpected, and then these hectic decisions first we were taken there. I mean, not only we, other troops as well. I don't talk about my... of course, it was in a way demoralizing, and nobody expected after that long, phony war that Germans would be that quickly just occupy France. And then we came to England. All the troops had to be consolidated and sorted out again, and new companies formed. We came first into London to Earl's Court. We stayed one or two nights in Earl's Court, and there the reorganization took place. Also the Royal Engineers were with us. Then there was the Army Service Corps, and from there they were sent. Meanwhile, there were plans for how to post the troops. Yeah, and, we were sent from Earth Court to Somerset in various places: Chart, Taunton, Ilminster, and there we did all sorts of war work, digging and things like that.
So your various postings, this of course was 1940, wasn't it?
It was 1940.
Yes. Were you involved at all with the invasion fair, you know, when you were in Somerset?
Yes, that
Beach
was...
Work. Yes.
Yes. There was that we of course we knew all leave was stopped and we were ready to do whatever there was to do. That was the one or two nights when the invasion was expected, which petered out and so on.
I wonder what your feelings were like, you know, having escaped, as it were, from Germany, and here again you were threatened. Was that a terrible blow for you?
It was a blow, yes. After we thought we were fairly safe and across the channel, far away from Germany, and then the Germans were just in France, quite near. Yes, but as I said, mentality in war is quite different. Everybody was, we lived in Somerset, and everybody was on one side chummy, and everybody was actually nice. Whenever in uniform, especially, people were nice to soldiers and so on. And, that made up for it. You get used to that. There was a war on, and at that time, of course, nobody knew there would be a second front, and nobody knew there would be an invasion. That was all to come. But we did what we were told. All right, it was a great disappointment, but fairly things came reverted to normal.
So after the invasion scare passed, what were the main work you did during the war?
I can't even say directly. There was a lot of digging and pipe laying. I don't know for what you caught me there. I really can't. Partly it was supply, but that was only a short while. I can't really tell you what we did there. But the next step, the rest I can tell you. Then we were sent to Stratford-on-Avon, and from there to Longmarton, which is was a sort of a camp 6 miles outside Stratford-on-Avon. And that was a very interesting place, because that was the place where the preparations took place for the invasion to come. We unloaded the pontoons, which were later needed in France. We unloaded sleepers for railways, which the main things there were the pipes. The code name was Pluto, which were laid under the channel to pump fuel for the tanks in the Normandy and so on. All these valves and vents and whatever there was, and loads of secret, partly there was also partly material for the Mulberry harbors. Day and night there was unloading from there, and my company had the job, or part of my company, to guard that, because it was forbidden territory and so on. And as I had two stripes, I had for half a year a guard. I did do nothing but having a 24 hours guard on and off then a few days off, and then on again, just to guard properly all the whatever there was.
And did you realize what this was for?
Not in detail. We knew it was for an invasion to come. I mean, nobody knew whether it would be a reality. Nobody knew whether we, but still, the preparations, we knew it would be used at a certain point.